when you come so close to death and you survive, you're naturally grateful. You really feel thankful to whatever, to universe, to God, to whatever, for giving you a new life. But it's very transactional at that point, or it was for me at that point, that my life is saved and so I'm thankful. What I realized when I began meditating was that gratitude did not require a reason. Gratitude did not require an object or a person or an event to invoke that feeling within me. And that was a big learning moment for me.
Stay connected to gratitude. Hit the follow button right now and join thousands of listeners tuning in each week. We're the Gratitude Seekers. Come join us. Hi, Gratitude Seeker. Welcome to a new episode of the Gratitude Podcast. Today with us, we have an investment analyst turned entrepreneur, 9/11 survivor, and author. His new book, On a Wing and a Prayer, chronicles his narrow escape from the World Trade Center on September 11, 2001, and the emotional journey towards redemption that followed. Now, our guest is running a company built on the values of Ayurveda, sustainability, giving back, and ethical trade in New York called Elements Truffles. I'm very happy to have him here. He's a very pleasant company, and I'm really curious where our conversation will go, especially since it's going to be now 20 years since 9/11. Kushal Choksi, welcome to the Gratitude Podcast.
Thank you, Georgian. It's such a pleasure to be here, and thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here with us, and let us know a little bit more about you, about what you're doing right now, and also talk a little bit, if you would like to, about that moment 20 years ago.
Sure. You already graciously introduced me. I'm an author. I am an entrepreneur, and used to be a banker, a trader on Wall Street. That's where I began my career. In my current day-to-day life, I run an artisanal chocolate company called Elements Truffles. And it's a company with a lot of heart in it. But that's not how I started. I started as a type A Wall Street banker who kind of fed on aggression and was sort of known to learn to thrive in a very high alpha environment, as the Wall Street forces one to do so. I came to New York about 21 years ago, to work on a trading desk at one of the top investment banks in the country. And that's where my career began. And everything was going hunky-dory. Everything was going just fine. I was rising very fast in my career. And at that moment, you know, how when everything is going fine, life has a way to throw a curveball. And that's what happened just about 20 years ago on 9/11/2001, where I found myself in World Trade Center when the first plane hit the South Tower. And the rest, they say, is history.
That's so interesting. So 1 year after you started working there, 9/11 happened, right?
That's correct. Yes.
Oh my God. I can only imagine how that must have been for you. And yeah.
Yeah, it was
a little bit How was that experience for you, and how it changed you? Because thankfully you're a survivor of the attacks, and you can tell the story. And also, I'm sure it's been a story of transformation. So let us know a little bit more about that.
Certainly. When that happened, when I found myself in the building when the first plane hit, it all happened so rapidly that it was too much for my senses to perceive. I really didn't know what had happened. The motives were obviously not clear. In that moment, people were not sure what had just happened. There was, of course, a pandemonium in the building, and people were helter-skelter, running all around. Some were going back to that workplace higher on the higher floors. Somebody was trying to run out of the building. Somebody was trying to go to the train station and catch the train back out of. And I just stood there frozen, dazed, not knowing what to do. And as I gained some semblance, as I gained some, clarity, I just started walking towards the door to get out of the building. And ironically, there was a security announcement there asking people to go back into the building because it was very unsafe outside. You know, it was because of the crash, small fire things, debris, the splinters from the glass, the insulation. There was like a little gray haze outside, and clearly from inside the building, looking outside the glass doors, you could tell that, you know, this is probably not safe to go outside. And so they were asking people to go indoors, you know, go back and stay in the center of the building. But there was a voice, there was someone who just said, no, let's go out of here. Let's just dash from here. It doesn't seem safe to be here. And I am so grateful. I listened to that person, that voice, and I ran out of the building. And as I stood there trying to figure out what happened, looking at the gaping hole in the south tower, in the north tower, in that moment, another plane just came in and rammed into the other World Trade Center. And my senses were really on overdrive in that moment. It was now clear that there was a motive behind this. First, I thought it could be a freak accident, but clearly it was not one. Still not sure what was going on, but the entropy in the surroundings was just getting elevated at an alarming rate. People were, the first responders were going into the building. People were, the media was there, the constant kind of wailing of sirens and emergency responders and people jumping down from the higher floors. And all that was just very, very, it's one of those things that gets deeply etched in your memory, that leaves such a deep impression that if I close my eyes, the whole scene is just so fresh and so vivid in my memory even today. And, when some things like this happen, it creates, or at least in my consciousness, it's create a very mixed set of feelings. Once, I came out, I came back home, I realized that I had become a statistic. I was now a 9/11 survivor. So on one hand, there was a new lease of life. There was gratitude that I was lucky. I was saved. There was a new sense of enthusiasm towards the road ahead, and kind of that feeling that yes, I had to do what I was doing with even more gusto and force. That living of American dream, that chasing what I was here to do, rising up the corporate ladder, all that felt, yes, I had to do that even faster because now I have, a sort of a bonus time. Yeah. But on the other hand, there was a feeling of disinterest, if I may even say some sort of dispassion there. I felt, what was the point of all this? You know, yes, I was lucky, but what if I do something else? I take on a new adventure, I take on a new project, a new job, and I'm doing well, but something like this happens again, and I'm perhaps not as lucky the next time. What is the point of this? You know, and so that was this a very conflicting sort of feeling that persisted for a long time. And in all that, I experienced a void, kind of a strange void within that I'd never experienced before. They say that when you see death from a very close quarters, when you come so close to witnessing death, this feeling is very natural to be arising from inside. Not knowing that, I was feeling it, and I was trying to get rid of it, but I did not know how. And so I persisted for quite some time. I tried, the way I knew how to get rid of that feeling was by distracting myself. You know, I thought maybe I could do something else, do something that gave me some sort of thrill, some sort of kind of adrenaline rush that would perhaps go and fill that void that I was feeling. So I started traveling the world. I started going to the complete off the beat places. From most adventurous pursuits that I took on at that time, just going unprepared in the Amazon forests or going into the Andes mountains and scaling the mountaintops, and you know, going in Europe, going in Asia, just trying to do all these kind of crazy things, only to come back and face that void again. I thought it was perhaps I need to do something on my professional front. This 9-to-5 is not for me. I need to be more progressive, more experimental. So I quit a very promising Wall Street career and joined a startup, just thinking that perhaps that would, you know, bring some fulfillment. But again, it proved to be a mere distraction. And I kept coming back to that same place where I had started.
And what actually helped then?
What really helped in that moment was a chance encounter with an enlightened master, a spiritual master who was traveling from India to New York at that point. I was very reluctant, Georgian. I tell you, I was hyper averse to anything that came close to yoga, meditation, breath work. I thought it was a pursuit for when you retire. I thought it was something you do when you have lots of time on your hands and nothing else to do. But my friend who had tried some meditation and breath work, he didn't buy into my resistance, and he said, no, you should definitely come in and try. What's the worst that can happen? You know, it's just an afternoon of your investment of time. You should definitely come. And so being very reluctant, I still showed up. And when the first time I experienced meditation, when the first time I tried the breath work, it felt like a lot of weight had lifted off my shoulder. For the first time in my life, I had experienced a state of mind without any thoughts for an extended period of time. And consciously, not something when you're doing, you're in a flow state, that happens. It's another thing that happens, you know, without much awareness. But here there was awareness. At the same time, there was that stillness in my mind that I'd never experienced before. And that made me think that there has to be something in here that I'm looking for, that my answers that I'm seeking, that fulfillment that I'm looking for could be in here. I was still very, questioning about everything, doubting everything, that are you sure that this really works? Am I really sure that this is not a placebo effect of some sort? Where is the science behind it? Show me the data. I had all these questions in my mind. But with that, I also had an experience of that calm. I also had an experience that I could not deny. And so I started looking deeper into it. And as I came across more research, I was happy and convinced that no, there was something in it that I had to experience more. I had to go deeper into it.
Wow. I love that. And I'm wondering if was that a moment in which you were also connected to gratitude? Like for me, meditation is very helpful in connecting to gratitude deeper. Is it similar in your case?
That is when I really appreciated and understood gratitude in its true sense. You know, in my narrow understanding, before I began meditating, gratitude to me was just being thankful that if somebody, you know, serves me a meal, I'm grateful towards it, or I'm, you know, at a very superficial level. Gratitude to me was in day-to-day very superficial. You do that to me, I'm thankful to you, and so I'm grateful to you. And to me, that was the understanding of gratitude. But as I began to go deeper, and as I began to meditate, I really became more attuned with that quality of ourself, that's something that is so ingrained in us. And gratitude in its true sense kind of became my experience. You know, when you come so close to death and you survive, you're naturally grateful. You really feel thankful to whatever, to universe, to God, to whatever, for giving you a new life. But it's very transactional at that point, or it was for me at that point, that my life is saved, and so I'm thankful. What I realized when I began meditating was that gratitude did not require a reason. Gratitude did not require an object or a person or an event to invoke that feeling within me. And that was a big learning moment for me, especially when, you know, it came to this feeling of gratitude.
That's so interesting. And how does that work? So for instance, for our listeners, you meditate and at one point you can reach this feeling of gratitude, or how does that work in your situation?
So maybe I can paint a contrast so that would be easier to imagine. But I could not meditate before, you know, before I learned breath work, this practice called sky breath. I really had trouble meditating, because the minute I close my eyes, all these thoughts and to-do lists and all that popped up in my head. And I struggled to get rid of that. But when I practiced sky breath, which is just, you know, simple rhythmic breath work, it took my mind and dropped it into a state where I just effortlessly sank into meditation. There was no effort to meditate. There was nothing I had to do to meditate. And this practice allowed me to create that intimate connection with myself. You know, as it is said, we are not just this physical body. There are seven layers to our existence, seven layers to our being. The grossest is, of course, the physical body, but subtler than that is the breath, and then is the mind, where you feel the emotions, the thoughts, where it's a field of energy where all the feelings spring from. And beyond mind is the intellect, that judging faculty. And beyond that is the memory, the storehouses of all our experiences based on which the intellect makes the decision. Then comes the ego. And after ego is the self. So it's body, breath, mind, intellect, memory, ego, and the self. And what happens every day in our day-to-day life is perhaps limited to this six layers of our existence, but who we really are and where this feeling of gratitude really lives and comes from, where it arises from, is that seventh layer, the self, that who we really are. What connects Georgian in Romania to a Kushal in New York? That thing that is common to all of us. And what I gained from this meditation or sky breath practice is ability to connect to this self at will, at when I wanted to. And I practiced that. I kind of took a little dip into that self. And in that space, all this that we're looking for, whether it's peace, whether it's joy, whether it's being in the present moment, whether it's gratitude, all these beautiful qualities of humanness are already in there. The self is made up of all this. So when you kind of get a glimpse of this, you really begin to appreciate that yes, this is what it is, and everything else that's happening, it's happening at a superficial level. It's like how, when you go to see a movie, you know, the movie is getting projected on the white screen. We lose the awareness of the white screen, which in this case, if I may draw a parallel to a self, but the self is not tainted by what movie is projected on. And after the movie stops, you know, self returns back to it. The white screen returns back to its original self. So it was my experience to kind of connect with that self that gave me this ability to take a dip into all that beauty that nature has to offer, that's already in us. Gratitude being one of the foremost that I cherish.
That's amazing. I love how you explain it, and I love how you're using imagery to make it even more clear for us, and to have us visualize these ideas, these wonderful ideas. And I'm very curious now, how do you define gratitude? Like, what is gratitude in your perspective?
To me, gratitude is unconditional love. It's just how the nature treats us. You know, like the nature doesn't say, you know, I do this for you because you're doing this for me. The trees don't say, I give you shade because you water me. Nature is always there in its resplendent self. And to me, gratitude is us in some small way reflecting that back. That being in the moment, being connected with yourself without a reason, being just, you know, that wanting to do something without anything in return. To me, that display of unconditional love is true gratitude.
I love that. It's actually one of the reasons why the first podcast design that I had for the gratitude podcast was of the sun.
Beautiful.
And it's, for me, it's very well connected in the sense that, like you said, it's unconditional love. It's always shining, and it's unconditional, and it shines for everyone. It warms us. It gives us light, and it's always a reason to feel grateful for it, because it's always there. It's something that we can always count on. Of course, there are days in which we cannot see the sun, or in which its rays aren't getting to us and aren't warming us as much as we would like to. But it's always there. And yeah, I think that's very similar to what you just said about nature and unconditional love. And yeah, it's just something that we can always be grateful for.
And you know, Georgian, it has been my experience that more grateful we are, or the more grateful we feel. Again, we talk about grateful as something to do, right? Actively practicing gratefulness. It helps, of course, it gets us started. But in my experience, whenever we're doing something that requires an effort, it doesn't, you know, it has that quality to wear thin. It creates a routine, and a routine always creates some sort of rigidity with it. So initially, in my earlier days, I actually actively started practicing gratitude. That, you know, and I still do in some ways, you know, it's our routine, my wife and I, it's our routine before we go to bed. We talk about three things that we were grateful in that day. So I do actively bring it in my awareness, that quality of us. But what I have noticed is, or I've learned, is that it is not doing, it is happening. And when we connect to ourselves, when we tap into that deeper corner of who we really are, it starts manifesting. And the more grateful we are, the more the benevolence of the nature flows. You know, it's just waiting for us to receive. It's gratitude in my understanding is just us being ready for what's out there, given our way. You know, it's all coming our way. Gratitude is just our way to get ourselves out of the way.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. And it's such a wonderful perspective, isn't it? It's just about getting out of the way and connecting with gratitude, letting it, or becoming aware of it, actually, right?
Exactly. I mean, we run our life on conditioning, right? We do certain things certain way. We behave in a certain way. We pursue our interests in certain way that we know how to do it, just because the world around us is been doing it forever, and the people who define that are just people like us. But for some reason, because it's been done like that, it's expected like that from the society around us, we just are so wired to do certain things in certain way. And just like that, certain outcomes, certain happenings in the world also forces us to respond to it in the way that the world expects us to. And that creates a pattern, that creates conditioning in our behavior. And so we kind of follow that. It's just like having like a tinted glasses with which you see the world, where everything appears, you know, red if you have a red tinted glasses. But the minute you remove that, you know, when you're like how you said earlier, when you meditate, when you connect with yourself, you realize that all these things, these patterns, are just because of some experiences that you've repeatedly gone through. And when that grip of those patterns is loosened, you naturally cannot but connect to yourself. And that was my experience. And this whole thing of 9/11, it really weighed very heavy on my mind, on my consciousness for a long time. But when I started actively doing the breath work, the sky breath or meditation, it started loosening its grip. The impressions were still there, the conditioning was still there, but it started losing its electrical charge, if you will, on my system. So while it's still there as a memory, it's not there to to throw me off my, you know, off my, what I'm doing. It doesn't throw me, it didn't throw me off my center. And that I thought was the biggest gift I could ever receive.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. And I'm wondering, would it be possible for us to do a short breathwork exercise for our listeners?
Yes, why not? Yes, why not? We can do a short exercise. Can we do it about for 5 minutes or so?
Mm-hmm, sure.
Okay, wonderful. So, you know, there are different breathing exercises. And what breath does is it has an intimate connection with our own mind. Why breath works, right? Because it has a very deep connection with the mind. Usually the mind, where the thoughts and emotions and memory, everything is coming out from, where you experience these, it leads, and there's a rhythm in the breath that follows, right? Say somebody's very angry, they're going to breathe in a certain way. Yeah. Somebody is in grief, they're going to sigh, they're going to have a longer exhalation. So mind that leads, and the breath follows behind it. But what we do is now we will turn it around. We learn to modulate our breath in a way that with that, the mind follows. We learn to tune our breath in a certain way. The emotions, the thoughts, everything that's going on in the mind, that follows your rhythm of breath. Because otherwise, it's very difficult to control the mind, as you may have imagined or experienced.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is we're going to do a very simple breath work. We will breathe deeply through our nose. And then we will exhale very slowly as you can, from imagining that you have a little straw between your lips. So you like create a little orifice, a little opening between your lips, as if you have an imaginary straw between your lips. And then you blow the air out of it as little as possible, as slowly as you can. Got it? So you're breathing in through the nose and breathing out through the imaginary straw between your lips. So if you want, you can close your eyes and you can take a normal deep breath in and you can breathe out. And now let's take a deeper breath in through the nostrils, through the nose, and slowly breathing out through the imaginary straw between your lips. And continue breathing in through the nose and exhaling through the little tiny opening between your lips. You perhaps notice that your exhalation is getting longer and longer with every out-breath. Just be with that experience and keep breathing in through the nose, out through the imaginary straw. If the mind has begun to wander, just bring it back to the breath. By now, it's almost as if the out-breath doesn't want to stop. It just keeps extending. As you exhale completely, you can relax and return to normal breathing. Keep your eyes closed. And one more time, let's begin breathing. Breathe in through the nose and breathe out through the imaginary straw as slowly as possible. Complete attention inwards and on your breath. Whatever the thoughts are passing through the head, you just keep your attention on the breath. Follow the breath as it goes in and as it slowly comes out. If the mind is wandering, bring it back to the breath. And relax your breath as you completely exhale. Take a long deep breath in and breathe out. One more deep breath in. And let go. And become aware of your body and your surroundings. And when you feel complete, taking your time, slowly open your eyes.
Wonderful.
Was it good?
It was amazing.
How do you feel, Georgian?
Great. And I'm sure that our listeners that were able to do this with us feel great as well. It's really interesting how the mind stops racing and you just calm down and
it feels like someone turned the volume down in the atmosphere. No.
exactly.
There's so many different types of breath works, George, and this one can calm you down. There are those that can energize you. There are others that can help you meditate. It's such a treasure of information and knowledge out there.
Exactly. And talking about knowledge and information, we are nearing the end of our time together, and I wanted to ask you, where can our audience find your book?
My book can be found on Amazon, On a Wing and a Prayer. Or alternatively, you can go to my website, kushalchoksi.com, and there are links to the book and some other things also, like breathwork meditations, on my website. From my website or directly on Amazon, it's called On a Wing and a Prayer. And the tagline says, spirituality for the reluctant, the curious, and the seeker.
And how did you choose the name?
You know, I've never been asked that question before, but I was thinking of this World War II pilot, John Ashcroft Jr., who, when coming back from World War II on a front, his aircraft was severely damaged. It was battered. His nose was broken. The aircraft's nose was broken. The rudder was shattered. And he radios the tower that I'm coming in to land on a wing and a prayer. You know, it's a phrase that is used to say that whenever there is distress, whenever the things become difficult, our attention automatically shifts towards that higher self, something that's bigger than all of us. And I thought it was very appropriate to kind of cap my journey, which was at one level so monochromatic, so after something, until this event that woke me up and made me ask the bigger question. And hence the name On a Wing and a Prayer came.
Wonderful, wonderful. So Gratitude Seekers, you can pre-order the book On a Wing and a Prayer, Spirituality for the Reluctant, the Curious and the Seeker. Kushal, thank you very much for being here with us, for sharing your wisdom, for doing this wonderful exercise with us, and for all of the wonderful things that you've shared with us.
Thank you, Georgian. I really loved this last 30, 40 minutes flew by, and I really enjoyed it. So thank you so much.
So did I. So did I. Thank you. Hey, Gratitude Seeker, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this interview. I really appreciate it. And if you could think of one person that would also benefit from it, share it with them. It might actually be the inspiration that they need to make their day or maybe even their life much better. Thank you so much once again. This has been Georgian Benta. Don't forget to keep seeking and spreading gratitude.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy one, get one free on our full line sale of tender Tyson chicken with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.